Welcome to the deep dive. If you are tuning in, you're likely a curious mind, someone who is actively looking to uncover the hidden machinery behind your everyday reality.
Yeah, that is definitely the kind of listener we have here.
Right. And today we are pulling from an incredibly detailed article in the OOTW Journal. It's titled The Predictive Brain, Predictive Coding, Priors, and the Rigus Model of Psychedelics.
It is a massive, very dense piece of literature.
It really is. So the mission of this deep dive is to basically shortcut you to being totally well-informed on this cutting-edge neuroscience. We want to take you from the very basic mechanics of human perception all the way to the absolute frontier of psychedelic therapy.
Which is quite the journey, honestly.
Definitely. Okay, let's unpack this. I want you to imagine that you are locked in a pitch black, completely silent, heavily armored vault.
Right, and you have no eyes, no ears, no hands to feel the walls.
Exactly. Your only connection to the outside world is this single chaotic telegraph wire, and it's just spitting out a relentless, frantic stream of Morse code.
And you don't even have the cipher for this code.
No cipher at all. You don't even know what the outside world consists of. Yet your singular task, your only job, is to construct a perfect, real-time, high-definition 3D simulation of whatever's happening outside that vault, using only the erratic tapping of that wire.
It sounds like an impossible sci-fi scenario.
It does, right. But this isn't some abstract philosophical thought experiment. This is the exact, literal, physical predicament of your brain at this very second.
Yeah, we walk around operating under this really comforting, unexamined assumption that our eyes are essentially just 4K video cameras.
Right, like projecting a live feed onto a screen in the back of our heads. We feel like we are just passively receiving reality.
But when you uncover the hidden machinery of human perception, you find a system that is entirely inverted. It's completely the opposite.
So if we look at the biological reality of the skull, I mean, it's starker than most people ever really pause to consider.
Oh, absolutely. That 3-pound mass of fat and tissue that is generating your entire conscious experience, it is sealed in absolute darkness.
Right.
By the time any information from the external environment reaches the cortex, it has been completely stripped of its physical properties.
Which is wild to think about. Like, the brain does not receive photons of light.
No, not a single photon. It does
Yeah.
not receive acoustic sound waves. Every sight, sound, smell, and, tactile sensation is transduced by your sensory organs into a single universal currency.
Action potentials.
Exactly. Action potentials. These are just electrical spikes traveling up nerve fibers. When you look at a red apple, there is no redness entering your brain.
Right. There is only a specific frequency of voltage changes traversing the optic nerve.
And the inherent problem with that universal currency is ambiguity. The data arriving in the dark vault, it doesn't come with a label identifying its source.
Right. So if we look at the visual system, which is the classic inverse optics problem, I think.
Yes, exactly. The inverse optics problem. The exact same two-dimensional pattern of electrical activity hitting the retina could be generated by a small object held, 2 inches from your face.
Or a massive object sitting 2 miles away on the horizon.
Right. Or a sudden burst of electrical spikes from the auditory nerve that could be the crack of a twig from a predator behind you.
Or it could just be a totally harmless acorn falling onto a rock.
Precisely. The raw sensory data in isolation is fundamentally noisy and entirely lacks intrinsic meaning.
So, because the brain cannot rely solely on this really ambiguous, noisy incoming data to survive, it has to do something else. It has to construct a hypothesis.
Yes, it leverages its evolutionary programming and its entire history of past experiences to build an internal generative model of what is most likely causing those electrical spikes on the outside.
But it doesn't just build the model and wait around,
No, it
right?
runs that model forward in time. The brain actively predicts the sensory data it should be receiving in the next millisecond. It literally generates a top-down hallucination of reality.
And this flips the conventional wisdom completely upside down. Perception isn't the process of receiving the world. Perception is the process of the brain forcefully projecting its best guess onto the world.
It is an active construction. The subjective experience you are having right now, the room you were sitting in, the device you were listening on, the feeling of your clothes against your skin.
That isn't the raw
No,
data.
that is the internal hallucination. Your sensory organs are essentially relegated to the role of proofreaders.
They're just checking the brain's work and sending back corrections when the hallucination gets it wrong.
Exactly. And the architecture supporting this was radically redefined in 1999 by Rajesh Rao and Dana Ballard.
Right, the predictive coding paper.
Yes, they published a landmark paper that gave this concept a concrete computational and neural shape, known as predictive coding.
Because prior to their work, the classic neuroscientific consensus dating back to the, I think, Nobel-winning research of Hugh Bell and Wiesel.
Yes, Hugh and Wiesel. They viewed the visual cortex as a bottom-up assembly line.
Right. The assumption was that raw data entered the primary visual cortex, which detected basic edges.
And then that signal was passed up to the next layer to form shapes, and then passed higher to form objects, culminating in a conscious realization.
But Rao and Ballard completely inverted that. They proposed that the cortex operates as a hierarchy, where the primary dominant flow of information is actually top down.
And when we talk about top down, we are looking at the anatomical structure of the brain itself.
Right. We're talking about signals originating in the higher, highly abstract processing areas of the neocortex.
The regions responsible for memory, context, and expectation. And those signals cascade downward toward the lower primary sensory areas, like the visual cortex at the back of the head.
And the anatomy bears this out overwhelmingly.
Overwhelmingly. The neural pathways carrying signals downward from higher cortical areas to lower visual areas vastly outnumber the feed-forward pathways carrying signals up from the eyes.
Which is crazy. If the brain were merely a passive receiver, the anatomical traffic would look like a massive multi-lane highway coming up from the retina, with perhaps a small dirt road of feedback going down.
But the reality is the exact reverse. The massive highway is the brain shedding its predictions down toward the sensory organs.
So it's less like my brain is watching a live TV broadcast of the room, and more like it's a sketch artist drawing from memory in a dark room, and my eyes are just shouting out corrections.
That is a perfect way to conceptualize it. The higher cortical areas are that wildly confident sketch artist.
Right, and the sensory organs don't call the artist to describe the entire scene pixel by pixel.
No, they only pick up the phone when the sketch artist gets something wrong. They say, move the lamp 2 inches to the left, or, hey, there's a new dog in the room.
And if the sketch is accurate, the assistants just stay off a radio entirely.
Exactly. So if the massive highway is the prediction coming down, we have to look at what is actually traveling up that small dirt road from the eyes.
Right. The lower sensory levels are acting as comparators.
Yes. They are taking the top-down prediction, the brain's expectation of the room, and overlaying it with the incoming bottom-up raw data from the retina.
And when the real-world data perfectly matches the brain's prediction, the incoming signal is effectively canceled out.
It is silenced through inhibitory inner neurons. The brain essentially notes that its model is accurate, and it does not need to process that specific visual information any further.
So the only signal that is allowed to travel back up the hierarchy to the higher brain is the mismatch.
Yes, and this residual mismatch is termed the prediction error. It represents the unpredicted data, the precise fraction of the sensory signal that the top-down model failed to anticipate.
Which introduces a profound metabolic efficiency into the system, right?
A massive efficiency. Brain tissue is incredibly energy intensive.
Right.
If the external world perfectly matches your internal model, there is zero prediction error. And the higher levels of your cortex don't need to burn ATP reconstructing a three-dimensional representation of a room you already know you are in.
Only surprise. Only the error warrants the expenditure of energy to travel upward and force the model to update.
Let's ground this in the actual behavior of a physical neuron, because it makes the abstract concept just undeniable.
Yeah, let's do that.
There's this classic phenomenon that puzzled neuroscientists for decades, involving neurons in the primary visual cortex that respond to lines.
Okay.
If a researcher shows a specific neuron a short line on a screen, that neuron fires rapidly, gets highly excited.
Right.
But if they extend that exact same line, making it longer and crossing further into the neuron's receptive field, that same neuron suddenly stops firing. It falls completely silent.
And under the old bottom-up passive receiver model, this behavior is a total paradox.
Absolutely. If a neuron detects a stimulus, more of that stimulus should theoretically provoke an equal or greater response.
But under the predictive coding framework, the neuron's silence is the only logical outcome.
Exactly. Once the primary visual cortex has registered the start of the line, the highest probability state is that the line will continue.
So the top-down model immediately predicts the extension of the line.
Yes. And because the extended line on the screen perfectly matches the brain's newly generated prediction, the prediction error drops to zero.
Wow. So the neuron falls silent not because it isn't seeing the line, but because a longer line is less surprising.
The brain has already accounted for it. The visual cortex is an intricate, multi-layered hierarchy of these predictions, with each successive layer attempting to explain away the layer below it, ruthlessly minimizing the amount of error that has to be passed upward.
But this local circuitry in the visual system is just the entry point, right?
Oh, yeah. The profound realization of the last two decades is that this prediction and correction loop is not confined to vision.
It is the fundamental operating system of the entire organism.
Exactly. If we connect this to the bigger picture, we have to look at Carl Friston.
Right, a figure who really towers over modern theoretical neuroscience.
He absolutely does.
Yeah.
Friston took this localized idea of predictive coding and expanded it into a grand, unifying theory known as the free energy principle.
The free energy principle. This is basically an attempt to define the single mathematical imperative governing any self-organizing biological system.
Yes. Whether we are talking about a single-celled paramecium, a fern, or a human brain, Friston argues that to resist entropy, to resist dissolving into the chaos of the environment, a living system must obey one rule.
It must minimize surprise.
Minimize surprise. And the term surprise in Friston's mathematical framework is heavily derived from information theory, specifically Shannon entropy.
So it is not surprise in the psychological sense of, like, a jump scare or a surprise party.
No. It is a statistical measure of improbability. In the context of a living organism, surprise is synonymous with long-run prediction error.
Right. To remain alive, a creature must continuously ensure that its sensory inputs fall within the exceedingly narrow physiological bounds that its phenotype expects.
Precisely. A human being fundamentally expects or predicts that its internal core temperature will hover near 98.6 degrees Fahrenheit.
It predicts a specific concentration of oxygen in the blood.
It predicts the tactile sensation of solid ground beneath its feet. If sensory inputs begin to deviate wildly from those deeply hardwired evolutionary priors, the organism is approaching a state of high surprise.
Which is a mathematical proxy for death.
Exactly.
So if we look at, say, a fish pulled out of a lake and thrown onto a wooden dock, we're looking at an organism experiencing catastrophic prediction error.
Yes, catastrophic. The fish's entire neurobiological model predicts the buoyancy of water, the specific pressure of depth, and the flow of liquid over its gills.
And on the dry dock, every single peripheral nerve in its body is suddenly flooding the central nervous system with massive, unresolvable prediction errors.
The sensory data is radically incongruent with the model required for its survival.
And the free energy principle dictates that the brain is an engine solely dedicated to reducing this gap between the predicted state and the actual sensory state.
There are exactly two mechanisms a system can deploy to reduce that gap and minimize the prediction error.
Okay, what's the first one?
The first mechanism is perceptual inference, which is what we explored with the visual cortex. You update your internal model to match the incoming data from the outside world.
Right, so if your model predicted an empty room, but your retinas send up a persistent error signal indicating a chair in the corner, you rewrite the model.
You now perceive the chair. The error is canceled and free energy is minimized.
Okay, but the second mechanism is where this theory completely upends how we think about our own bodies.
Yes. Instead of updating the internal model to fit the external world, the organism acts upon the external world to force it into alignment with the internal model.
This is active inference.
Exactly. This means physical movement, motor control, and behavior are not separate departments from perception. They are the exact same error-minimizing equation running in reverse.
Wait, so when I reach for my coffee cup, is my brain actually predicting my hand is already on the cup and the physical movement of my arm is just my body desperately trying to fix the error of my hand and not being there yet?
Yes. The implications for motor control are exactly that astonishing. Under active inference, the motor cortex does not send movement commands down the spinal cord.
It doesn't?
No. It sends down a high-level, unyielding prediction about the physical state of the body. If you intend to pick up a coffee cup, your brain generates a high-precision prediction that your hand is already gripping the cup.
Oh, wow. And your proprioceptive system, the sensory receptors in your muscles and joints, immediately registers a massive mismatch.
Right. The proprioceptors report that your hand is actually still resting on your lap.
So the brain intentionally creates a localized state of high surprise. It fabricates a self-induced prediction error.
Exactly. But instead of the brain updating its model to acknowledge that the hand is in the lab, it stubbornly holds on to the prediction that the hand is on the cup.
Wow.
To resolve this manufactured error, The reflex arcs in the spinal cord and the muscles are forced to contract and move the arm through space.
So the physical movement of the limb is simply the body scrambling to change the sensory feedback so that it finally matches the brain's uncompromising prediction.
You do not command your body to move. Your brain hallucinated that it has moved, and your muscles contract to make the lie true, thereby silencing the sensory alarm bells.
If I take that seriously, it completely reframes human autonomy. I mean, my body is just a mechanism for chasing down and validating my brain's hallucinations.
It's a radical shift in perspective.
But this introduces a massive logistical bottleneck, right? If my brain is constantly generating top-down predictions and my senses are continuously generating bottom-up errors and my limbs are moving around to fix those errors, the entire system is an infinite feedback loop of noise.
It would be, yes.
The brain has to have a way to adjudicate these conflicts. It needs an arbitration system to decide in any given millisecond whether it should update the hallucination or ignore the sensory data.
And that arbitration system is precision. The brain utilizes a statistical weighting system for every single signal, a concept known as precision.
Precision.
Precision is the estimated reliability or the inverse variance of a signal. It acts as the ultimate volume knob for consciousness.
The volume knob.
The brain does not treat all predictions and all errors as equally valid. It calculates a precision weight for the top-down prior belief and a precision weight for the bottom-up sensory error.
And whichever signal is assigned, the higher precision essentially wins the tug of war and dictates your conscious experience.
Exactly. So if the volume knob on the top-down prediction is turned up incredibly high, meaning the brain has a high precision prior, it will trust its internal model so completely that it will actively filter out, aggressively discount, or entirely ignore bottom-up sensory errors that contradict it.
And we actually rely on this for basic functioning in a chaotic world, don't we?
Oh, absolutely.
Like when you look at a doctor's rushed, illegible signature on a prescription pad?
Yes. The raw, bottom-up visual data is just a jagged, meaningless line. The prediction error from the retina is massive. It's screaming that these are not letters.
Yet, because you have a strong, high-precision prior, based in the context of a pharmacy and a prescription pad, your brain anticipates the name of a medication.
The brain effectively mutes the volume on the messy sensory error and amplifies the volume of the top-down belief.
So you effortlessly read the word amoxicillin, even though those specific letters are not physically present on the paper.
The high-precision prior smooths over the noisy reality. We see this all the time when we recognize a friend's face in a dark, poorly lit room.
Right. The sensory data is just a shadowy blob, but the high-precision expectation projects the familiar facial features onto the shadow.
This precision weighting system is what keeps us from being paralyzed by every minor fluctuation in light or sound.
But we cross a critical threshold when we examine what happens when this volume knob physically jams.
Yes, that is where things break down.
What happens when a top-down prior is assigned so much precision, when it becomes so deeply entrenched and heavily weighted that it becomes completely deaf to all incoming contradictory evidence?
This specific mechanical failure in the predictive processing system is now being viewed as the root architecture of severe psychological suffering.
Wow.
When we view clinical depression through the lens of predictive coding, we stop seeing it merely as a chemical imbalance of mood and start seeing it as a profound perceptual disorder driven by pathologically overweighted priors.
So a depressed brain has cultivated a deeply ingrained, high-precision predictive model that fundamentally expects worthlessness, rejection, and negative outcomes.
And because this top-down prior is held with such crushing precision, the brain actively, aggressively filters the bottom-up sensory data of the real world to confirm the model.
This maps perfectly onto the behavioral reality of depression. If someone suffering from severe depression receives a genuine compliment or achieves a tangible success at work, that event generates a positive bottom-up prediction error.
It contradicts the model.
But because the brain's internal model of worthlessness is weighted so heavily, the positive error is assigned exceedingly low precision.
It is treated as statistical noise. The brain immediately explains it away.
Yeah.
They'll think, oh, they're only complimenting me out of pity.
Or that success was a statistical fluke that I can't repeat.
The internal model utterly refuses to update in the face of contradictory data. The depressed mind becomes a sealed fortress.
The precision of the negative priors has shut down the fundamental neurobiological mechanism for learning and updating.
The same computational pathology applies to severe anxiety disorders.
Right.
The anxious brain operates on a hyper-precise prior that constantly predicts threat, vulnerability, and danger.
Therefore, it interprets every piece of ambiguous sensory data as confirmation of that threat.
Yes. A neutral facial expression on a passerby is processed as overt hostility. A minor, normal fluctuation in heart rate is immediately predicted to be a catastrophic cardiac event.
The top-down expectation of danger completely overwrites the reality of safety.
And when we look at the mechanics of addiction, we see the exact same trapped volume knob.
The addicted brain has formed an incredibly high precision prior, predicting that a specific substance or behavior will provide essential relief or survival value.
This prediction becomes so loud and so dominant that it drowns out massive, catastrophic prediction errors from the external world.
Right, like the loss of a career, the destruction of a marriage, failing liver enzymes. These are massive real-world prediction errors.
And in a healthy system, they would immediately force the internal model to update and recognize the behavior as lethal.
But because the prior predicting the necessity of the substance is pathologically precise, those negative consequences are simply filtered out.
The prediction error cannot breach the threshold to update the model. The brain's internal algorithm has grown completely deaf to the external destruction.
It's like having the noise cancellation turned up so high on your headphones that you can't hear the fire alarm going off. The internal model has become a prison because it literally stops listening to the outside evidence.
That is exactly it. Mental suffering, in this framework, is the result of a highly efficient prediction machine that has lost its flexibility. The beliefs are simply too rigid.
And this brings us to a really crucial hinge point. If depression, anxiety, and addiction are caused by high-level priors that have become pathologically rigid, if the internal model is a dictator that refuses to listen to the senses, how do we violently dismantle that rigidity?
How do we force the volume knob back down so the brain can learn again?
Yes. This is where the neurobiology of perception collides with the frontier of psychedelic science, specifically through a groundbreaking theoretical framework known as the Rebus model.
The Rebus model, formalized in 2019 by Robin Carhart-Harris and Carl Friston.
It stands as perhaps the most elegant, comprehensive algorithmic theory of psychedelics we possess.
Rebus is an acronym for Relaxed Beliefs Under Psychedelics.
Relaxed Beliefs Under Psychedelics. I love how perfectly that fits.
It really does. The entire theory distills the profound, often ineffable psychedelic experience into one central computational mechanism. Classic psychedelics act pharmacologically to systematically relax the precision weighting of high-level priors.
They are chemical tools that physically reach into the cortex and turn down the volume knob on those rigid top-down predictions.
Exactly. To understand how a molecule achieves this computational feat, we have to look at the pharmacology.
Right. Classic psychedelics compounds like psilocybin, LSD, and DMT, they all share a primary mechanism of action.
Yes, they are agonists at the 5-HT2A serotonin receptor. And what makes this crucial is the highly specific anatomical distribution of these receptors.
They're not just scattered randomly around the brain?
No, 5-HT2A receptors are massively concentrated in the highest levels of the cortical hierarchy, specifically on the apical dendrites of layer V pyramidal neurons in the neocortex.
And layer V pyramidal neurons are essentially the heavy lifters of the cortex.
They are. They are the massive cells whose long axons span the layers of the brain and project down to lower areas.
They are the anatomical infrastructure that carries the top-down predictions we've been talking about.
Exactly. The apical dendrites of these layer V neurons act as the central integration hubs for the brain's highest level beliefs. The abstract narratives about our identity, our traumas, and our expectations of reality.
And when a psychedelic molecule binds to these 5-HT2A receptors, it causes the neurons to depolarize and fire asynchronously.
Right. Normally, these neurons fire in synchronized rhythms, often in the alpha or beta frequency bands, which act as the carrier waves for top-down predictions.
So the psychedelic just completely disrupts this synchrony.
Yes. Computationally, this asynchronous firing equates to a massive reduction in the precision weighting of those specific top-down priors.
Wow.
The rigid predictions literally lose their mathematical authority.
So if the top-down authority is suddenly chemically revoked, we have to look at the other half of the equation. What happens to all the bottom-up information?
All those prediction errors from the eyes, the ears, the body, and the emotional centers that were previously being suppressed, filtered, and ignored by the rigid model.
Yeah, what happens to them?
The gates are thrown completely open. Information that was previously being explained away or discounted by the high-precision priors now flows upward through the cortical hierarchy unchecked.
The brain is suddenly flooded with raw, unedited sensory data and massive amounts of unsuppressed prediction error.
And because the high-level model is no longer strong enough to force the incoming data into its rigid preconceived boxes, the model itself becomes fluid, unstable, and highly revisable.
We can map this computational theory directly onto the physical neuroimaging of a brain under psychedelics, right?
Yes, absolutely. When we look at fMRI scans, we see a loosening of the thalamic gate.
The thalamus. That acts as the brain's sensory relay station, heavily filtering incoming data to protect the cortex from sensory overload.
And psychedelics open that filter, allowing the bottom-up traffic to surge into the cortex.
Simultaneously, and perhaps most importantly, we observe a profound disintegration of the default mode network, or the DMN.
The DMN is an interconnected network of brain regions that is highly active when we are at rest, daydreaming, ruminating on the past, or projecting into the future.
It is widely considered the physical seat of our highest level priors, our ego, our autobiographical self, and our deeply held personal narratives.
Under the influence of a psychedelic, the rigid, highly synchronized connectivity of the DMN completely fragments. It loses its cohesive authority over the rest of the brain.
Robin Carhart-Harris parallels this with his entropic brain hypothesis.
Yes. In information theory, entropy is a measure of uncertainty, or the number of possible microstates a system can inhabit.
The entropic brain hypothesis states that by relaxing the precision of constraining priors, psychedelics push the brain into a state of higher entropy.
The system becomes hotter, more flexible, and vastly less constrained by its usual ingrained pathways. The academic literature sometimes refers to this as the anarchic brain.
They call it the anarchic brain, which sounds terrifying and chaotic to a listener. But based on this, is it really chaos, or is it more like hitting refresh or force quit on a frozen computer application?
But that is a much better way to think about it. The idea of your mind descending to chaos sounds like a nightmare, especially for someone with severe anxiety.
Right.
But if we frame it through the rebus model, it isn't chaos for the sake of destruction. The pathologically overweighted prior edit, the depressed belief has been operating as a totalitarian dictator, silencing all opposing sensory evidence.
So relaxing that prior just removes the dictator.
The immediate aftermath is indeed a state of free-flowing, unconstrained information, which is anarchic, but it is a necessary therapeutic destabilization.
You cannot reshape a piece of iron without first heating it up until the rigid crystal lattice melts into a fluid state.
Exactly. The melting of that rigid lattice is what transitions us from the neurobiology to the actual subjective experience.
Because we have the computational theory and the biology, but how does relaxed precision actually translate into the wild subjective feelings of a psychedelic trip?
Well, the Rubius model doesn't just explain brain scans. It provides a stunningly precise mechanical explanation for the wild phenomenological feelings.
Like visual hallucinations, the classic geometric fractals. Predictive coding explains exactly why they occur, right?
It does. In normal waking consciousness, the raw data hitting your retina is incredibly noisy. It's full of static, minor light fluctuations, and cellular imperfections.
But your high-level prior predicts, for example, a smooth, blank, white wall.
So it ruthlessly suppresses all that visual static and forces your conscious perception to see a smooth wall.
Under a psychedelic, the precision of that smoothing prior is radically relaxed. The top-down expectation of the blank wall loses its grip.
Consequently, all that bottom-up visual noise, the static and the retinal blood vessel shadows, flows up into the visual cortex unsuppressed.
But the primary visual cortex, known as V1, is hardwired as a pattern recognition machine.
Yes. Its physical architecture is built to process lines, edges, and contours.
So without the high-level prior constraining it, the V1 cortex begins to spontaneously self-organize the unsuppressed noise according to its own fundamental geometric architecture.
It's generating Turing patterns based on its own cellular structure.
Wow. So when someone sees crawling lattices, spirals, cobwebs, and tunnels on a blank wall, they aren't peering into another dimension.
No, they are literally perceiving the raw, low-level anatomical mechanics of their own visual system, which are usually rendered invisible by top-down prediction.
That is just incredible. And the phenomenon extends far beyond vision into the realm of profound emotion, right?
Yes. One of the absolute hallmarks of the psychedelic experience is a sense of overwhelming cosmic meaning.
Right. A person might stare at a mundane patch of carpet, a single leaf, or listen to a familiar chord in a song and feel as though it contains the secrets of the universe.
Predictive coding explains this through the mechanics of unabsorbed prediction error.
Unabsorbed prediction error. Let's dig into that.
In everyday life, because our priors are so strong, they instantly absorb and explain away almost everything we look at.
You glance at a coffee cup, the brain registers cup, the prediction error is zero, and you feel absolutely nothing. You just ignore it.
But under Rebus, those top-down priors are relaxed and weakened. When you look at the coffee cup, the weakened prior can no longer easily absorb or explain away the dense sensory data of the ceramic texture, the reflection of light, or the curve of the handle.
Therefore, the brain is flooded with a massive, sustained wave of unabsorbed prediction error.
And subjectively, unabsorbed prediction error is the exact phenomenological feeling of significance, salience, and surprise.
Here's where it gets really interesting. If I'm staring at a patch of carpet and crying because it's so beautiful, it's not that the carpet magically changed. It's that my brain's prior simply stopped telling me, ignore this, it's just a carpet, and suddenly I'm seeing all the raw data of its texture and color for the first time.
Exactly. When a signal cannot be explained away by your internal model, your neurobiology flags it as novel and deeply important.
The filtering mechanism vanished, and you are experiencing the raw, immense bandwidth of sensory data for the very first time.
The brain is generating surprise. It cannot explain away. And that relentless surprise registers emotionally as profound awe.
But experiencing a beautiful carpet is one thing. How does dissolving the ego and flooding the brain with significance actually cure the deep-seated pathologies we discussed earlier?
Well, if we follow this mechanism all the way up the cortical hierarchy, we arrive at the most profound and sometimes terrifying aspect of a high-dose psychedelic experience, ego dissolution.
The subjective feeling that the boundary separating you from the external universe has completely evaporated.
Right. In the predictive coding framework, the continuous bounded sense of self is not a ghost in the machine. The ego is simply a prior.
It's just another prior.
Yes. It is the highest level, most abstract, most heavily weighted prior the brain possesses. It is the master narrative that organizes all other predictions. I am a singular entity existing continuously through time, distinct from my environment.
Just like the prior that predicts a blank wall or the prior that predicts a coffee cup, the master prior of the self is anchored in those layer V pyramidal neurons.
And when the 5-HT2A receptors are agonized heavily enough, the precision of that master narrative is turned all the way down to zero.
The brain physically ceases to predict a rigid separation between the internal organism and the external environment.
When that high-level prediction stops, the subjective experience of being a distinct ego simply blinks out of existence. The software that draws the boundary has been temporarily suspended.
That is a breathtaking realization, but it demands we ask the clinical question.
Right.
Experiencing fractal geometry or dissolving into the universe is profound, but how does this temporary state of high entropy actually cure deep-seated, life-destroying pathologies like severe depression?
The critical insight of the Rebus model is that the psychedelic molecule does not cure the disease. The drug does not enter the brain and surgically implant a new, happy belief system.
The molecule merely dismantles the fortress. By relaxing the precision of the pathologically overweighted priors, it creates a profound, temporary window of neuroplasticity.
The mind's model of reality becomes completely fluid and revisable. This is why the pharmacological action is only half of the equation.
The other half is the environment in which that fluid state occurs.
Yes. Right. The concepts of SET, which is the patient's mindset, setting the physical and emotional environment and integration, the therapeutic work done in the days and weeks afterward. These are not optional New Age accessories.
They are the core mechanisms of the treatment.
Exactly. If the brain is in a hypoplastic, highly suggestible state, the physical setting and the guidance of a trained therapist act as the new mold for that plastic brain to set into.
The molecule opens the model. The therapy reshapes it.
While rigid defenses are down, the therapist helps the patient introduce new, healthier prediction errors, experiences of safety, unconditional self-compassion, and deep connection.
Because the brain remains in a state of heightened neuroplasticity, the afterglow period that can last for weeks, those new adaptive priors can be solidified and strengthened.
The stuck model is unfrozen, rewritten, and allowed to refreeze in a healthier configuration.
But this immense plasticity, this window of revisable belief, carries an incredible amount of inherent risk.
It absolutely does. Mm-hmm. An open model can be reshaped for the better, but it can absolutely be reshaped for the worse.
And the scientific literature offers a vital counterargument to Rebus, known as the ALBUS model.
Right, ALBUS, which stands for Altered Beliefs Under Psychedelics. This raises an important question. The ALBUS critique argues that psychedelics might not solely act to relax high-level priors.
In certain chaotic circumstances, the psychedelic state might actually act to hyper-strengthen the precision of newly generated, rogue predictions.
The clinical danger here is significant. Because the brain is flooded with unabsorbed prediction error, that overwhelming feeling of profound cosmic meaning, it is desperately searching for any cognitive model to explain that meaning.
If a stray thought, a novel idea, or a bizarre association arises during that highly charged entropic state, the brain might mistakenly attach all of that free-floating significance to that specific idea.
It effectively cements that random thought as an absolute, unquestionable truth, assigning it massive precision.
So what does this all mean for the listener? If ALBUS is right, couldn't someone go in trying to cure their anxiety but come out absolutely convinced of a completely unwarranted, irrational belief because a random thought got hyper-strengthened during the trip?
Yes. If someone goes into a session trying to cure their depression but they lack a safe setting, they might have a random paranoid thought about a conspiracy theory or a profound delusion.
And because the brain hyper-strengthens that specific prediction during the window of plasticity, they could emerge fundamentally believing that delusion is the absolute objective architecture of reality.
This is a documented clinical phenomenon. Psychedelic insights frequently carry what William James called a noetic quality. They feel unshakably, objectively true to the experiencer.
Sometimes generating grandiose or delusional convictions that have zero basis in external reality.
This highlights the dark side of a hyperplastic, highly suggestible brain. The interplay between top-down and bottom-up signaling under psychedelics is likely far more complex than a single master volume dial being turned down.
Some dials may be muted while others are pushed to maximum. Honest, rigorous neuroscience views Rebus as an incredibly powerful explanatory framework, but acknowledges that human evidence remains largely indirect and the debate is highly active.
This necessitates the severe clinical caution surrounding this frontier. A mind whose predictive model has come entirely unstuck is profoundly vulnerable.
Which is precisely why clinical trials enforce strict exclusion criteria.
Yes. Individuals with a personal or family history of psychosis, schizophrenia, or bipolar disorder are navigating nervous systems where the predictive models are already precariously balanced or prone to fracturing.
Introducing a profound destabilizing agent, a massive precision relaxer into that system, can trigger severe, long-lasting psychiatric emergencies.
Additionally, there are severe physical risks regarding drug interactions, particularly with SSRI antidepressants,
which target the same serotonergic systems and can either blunt the psychedelic effect entirely or risk serotonin syndrome.
These compounds are tools capable of shattering the predictive lens through which a human being constructs reality. If a proper support structure, the therapeutic container, and the integration process are absent, the pieces of that lens might go back together, jagged.
The setting and the integration are the only safety nets preventing a therapeutic intervention from becoming a psychiatric casualty.
Very well said.
So we have mapped an immense conceptual landscape today. We started in the dark, silent vault of the skull, recognizing that the brain only receives ambiguous electrical Morse code.
To survive, the brain operates as a prediction machine, hallucinating a top-down model of reality and using incoming sensory data merely to correct its prediction errors.
We explored Carl Friston's free energy principle, which posits that minimizing the surprise is the fundamental driving force of all perception and physical action.
We identified precision weighting as the critical volume knob, deciding whether we trust our internal beliefs or external evidence.
And how a jammed volume knob leads to the rigid fortresses of depression and addiction.
Finally, we unpacked the RBS model, examining how psychedelics act via 5-HT2A receptors to temporarily relax those rigid priors.
Dismantling the ego, flooding the cortex with sensory reality, and opening a critical, albeit perilous, window of neuroplasticity where a stuck mind can be rewritten.
It is a paradigm shift that unifies cellular biology with subjective consciousness. However, based entirely on the logic of the predictive coding framework we've discussed, I want to leave you with a non-pharmacological extrapolation.
Okay, let's hear it.
We have focused extensively on how a powerful chemical agent can force the relaxation of rigid priors. But if the free energy principle holds true, if the brain constantly weighs past expectations against current sensory errors, and if mental rigidity stems from a deficit of surprising sensory input, we must ask if we can actively achieve a gradual form of the Rebus effect without any chemical intervention.
Using the mechanics of the brain to manually unstick ourselves, if rigid beliefs calcify because our daily environment perfectly matches our narrow expectations, the solution would be to intentionally orchestrate a massive, sustained influx of prediction error.
Exactly. We could subject ourselves to radical cultural shock. traveling to environments where our social scripts completely fail, immersing ourselves in wildly different cultures, or deliberately engaging with entirely opposing ideological viewpoints that heavily contradict our deepest narratives.
By forcing our brains into a prolonged state of manageable, high surprisal prediction error, we demand that the system naturally, over time, loosen the precision of our most rigid beliefs to accommodate the new data.
It is the deliberate pursuit of surprise as a mechanism for cognitive flexibility, actively stepping off the map so your brain is forced to drop its old compass.
As you go about the rest of your day, look around the room you're in. Look at the device you're holding. Feel the weight of gravity pulling you into your chair. It feels like an undeniable, objective, seamless reality.
But remember the dark vault.
Every single element you are experiencing right now is a masterfully constructed, high-definition prediction generated by 3 pounds of wet tissue sealed in the pitch black of your skull. You are living inside your brain's best guess. And the fact that the guess is so perfectly rendered that you never even suspect it is a hallucination that is the true, staggering miracle of your neurobiology. Keep questioning the reality your brain is building for you. We will catch you on the next deep dive.